So anyways, congratulations on being over a year ahead of the DNA sequencing curve. And I remember asking you about this. Like, dude, why would they want to put computer programming in a DNA sequence? And you went, Mike, it doesn't have anything to do with biology. It's so that anyone that would analyze that particular DNA code would be confident that their computer would be compromised.
That's right.
Well, can you, and I want to get back to the Kavanaugh hearing, but is there a way that a medical facility's machines could now be protected now that this is out?
That's what I've been working on for the last several years, is try to avoid the excessive compromises that are coming. Getting access to manipulating DNA is not terribly easy right now. It's getting easier, especially using nanorobotic technologies. I'm going to be in Hacker Halted in 2 weeks, and we'll be demonstrating there the aerosol distribution of nanotechnology, and someone's going to inhale the nanoparticles, and we've got it pre-coded, so it goes to a specific spot in the person's hand. And when I go to the command line in the computer, I've set up an ad hoc network in their body, because each of these nanoparticles will go to a different section. So they'll set up like a relay station. The first one will be embedded in the fluid in the eye, because there's less attenuation. There's no breakdown of signal through the air. It'll get to the eye, and then from there into the neurological system, down to the point where I have it in the person's hand and make their fingers flinch.
Now, which eye, the vitreous humor or the aqueous humor?
The aqueous humor.
See, people didn't know
that. Very good.
Mr. Church, how do you even know these things? Because I study anatomy. So,
very good.
Okay, so you can make the guy's hand twitch?
Yeah, you can make a finger twitch.
This is after he inhales the nanobot.
That's right. It takes about 15 minutes for all of the nanoparticles to get into place to set up the network. Each is designed to go to a specific location in the body based on pH, body temperature, which varies to a hundredth of a degree in some places. And same thing with the pH, and as well as anatomical composition. It seeks out like type cells. So now, if I have one that's programmed to be like linked to a nerve cell, which is my terminal piece, and my my initial gateway, once you get into the body, it sends the message using the nervous system. So I'm actually sending the computer code to a nanobot that's embedded up near the base of the stem of the brain. And it's going to shoot down the arm to a receptor that's going to be embedded in one of his fingers. And when it receives that malicious code, it's going to interrupt the neurological transmission of signals and make it flitch. Flick. That's the word I'm looking for. Right. Flick. Or flinch.
Flinch. So
that's it.
Those of you, there are people in the chat room that are listening to this going like, that's not real. You guys are making this up. Now I gotta tell you,
come to my lab,
Igor. Come to my laboratory, Igor. Come study with me, Igor. Now I gotta tell you that the I remember you sitting on my back patio, almost finished them. In June of 2016, you came down for some conference that was in New Orleans. And me and daughter number two went down and picked you up. We took you to Cooter Brown's. We had oysters and oysters on a half shell and beers and what have you. And then we headed to the church hacienda. Daughter number two was hung around for a little while before she had to go to work. And she was sitting out there and she was listening to this very conversation. And then afterwards, after you left to go home, she came the next time she talked, she goes, Dad, who is that Greg guy? He was weird. I said, oh, that's Greg. It's before you were even junk bomb. I said, oh, that's Greg. He does the, reverse deception show on the Crusade channel and all. And he goes, that stuff about the nanobots and all that, that's not real. And I said, well, he thinks it's real. And he goes, well, my daughter was like, that sounds like wacko conspiracy theory stuff. Everything that you did in the first episode of Reverse Deception is now being written about in medical and scientific journals. Right. And it seemed like it was far-fetched and fantastical at the time. That who is this Carpenter guy? Mike, you got a real Alex Jonesian wacko there. George Norrie and Art Bell have nothing on this Carpenter guy. But I went, yeah, but Carpenter's actually a scientist. He's studying to get a PhD. Bad, matters not. He's crazy. Well, you weren't nuts. And I'm now wondering, all these things that you've been telling people to do on Reverse Deception Radio here, maybe you people ought to purchase a Founders Pass membership and go into the archives, CrusadeChannel.com, starting with episode 1, and start listening to Reverse Deception, because I think this Greg Carpenter guy may be onto something.
I did get a big vindication in the last week, too, with the news that the FBI fabricated its own evidence so it can get the warrants that it needed against Donald Trump and the fake Russian spying thing, too.
Oh, really?
I called that one out back December, I think it was 2016, when the FBI and DHS printed their report called Grizzly Step, and they were identifying all the Russian influence that was coming out at the time. I said, no, that's not the Russians doing that. It's the FBI doing that, and it's the CIA helping them. And the FBI is doing all of the propaganda, and the CIA is doing all the technical. And it just came out just this week that the FBI created all of the propaganda that they needed to secure warrants. They created this stuff through fake accounts, pushed it out, publicized it as other people saying it, and that gave them enough information or enough evidence, quote, that they needed to go secure the warrants so they could start investigating the Russian influence in the elections of 2016.
But there wasn't any influence. Now, this is not to say that the Russians right. don't have an interest in this and that they don't try. The United States has an interest in every election that's held around the world, and it tries to manipulate almost every single one of them. So this is how we know that it's done and how we know that it's possible, because we freaking do it. Now, before we run out of time, because Brother Andre's coming up at 8, did you Skype in about the Kavanaugh hearing, or was there something else?
Yeah, no, I wanted to talk about that a little bit, too, because this behavior is just unrealistic. Mike, let me ask you a question.
Ask
sir.
Me a question, sir.
What's the last time that a U.S. senator was expelled for behavior?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to have to say, no, wait a minute. I know the answer to this. There is an answer. I know this. I want to say that it was the guy that tried to beat Andrew Jackson upside the head, but I don't, you know what? Drawing a blank. When was the last time?
Good guess. He was not expelled. He was, he did go through the censoring process, but he was not expelled. The last time was 1862.
And who was the senator?
There was Trustin Polk, Waldo Johnson, and Jesse Bright, all expelled for supporting the Confederate Rebellion. And all the other senators that were expelled in 1861 were from the southern states. The only other senator who was ever expelled was William Blunt from Tennessee. He was expelled for treason and conspiracy to incite the Creek and Cherokee Indians to assist Great Britain in the invading Florida.
Yeah, I knew that there was one around the time of Jackson too. But he may have been a member of the. Who was the guy that confronted Andrew Jackson and tried to shoot him, and his pistol misfired, and then Jackson took his cane and beat him upside the head, beat him senseless.
Yeah, I don't remember, but that's a good story though. I tell you that.
Okay, so when was the last time? Here, I guess the question is then. Should Senator Grassley have asked for the expulsion Amy Klobuchar, Senator Harris, and Senator Blumenthal, who refused to stand down when they were told that they did not have the floor and were totally out of order in the beginning of the Kavanaugh hearing yesterday, right?
Well, at least get censored or something. Something should have happened. There's only been 10 senators that have ever been censored. That's it.
Now,
and we can't seem to even call out bad behavior or illegal activity when it really is happening in front of us. And the talk, I mean, just the discussion here in front of the children, I mean, that is so far over the top. I don't even know where to begin with that. There's no reason why it shouldn't have happened in the first place. Let me just put it like that. The whole thing shouldn't have happened. There's rules in the Senate and there's rules in the House, and you're not even following those rules. You are, as you said before, you are above the law. The law does not apply to the senators. You're not, number one, I mean, you don't have to contribute to Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, you name it. They're exempt from all that stuff.
Yeah, they are. And the other fact, or the other thing that ought to factor in here, is there is what is known in the United States Senate as a set of rules. They were written by Thomas Jefferson in 1790 and 1791. They've only been altered a few times, and they've been altered because you have to add things like electronic communication. Instead of having everything on a ballot vote, you get to have a voice vote, or you can have an electronic vote now. Very few adaptations or adjustments to the rules, but they were authored by Jefferson. And then these rules are given to who to enforce? Not Charles Grassley, not anyone who's the head of the Senate, not the Speaker, or I'm sorry, the President of the Senate. Who are they given to, Gregory?
It's the Speaker. It's the Speaker.
Well, no, they're given to the parliamentarian. The parliamentarian has the parliamentarian has jurisdiction on the implementation and enforcement of the rules. If he says, "Hey, right here, you're out of order. This you violated this rule," then the parliamentarian, he could either tell the chairman, "Hey, you could censure him because he's out of order," or after the fact, they could say, "You are out of order. You got to pay this fine," or whatever the case may be.
Right.
But the reason that you have a parliamentarian, though, is why? Why do you have a parliamentarian?
Make sure that the rules don't get violated in any way.
That's right. To make sure that there is an actual process by which this. Now, look, we all know that none of this crap that happens in public has anything to do with making the legislative sausage, which they do behind closed doors. We all know this. But did you know that parliamentary rules still still must be abided when the sausage is being made behind closed doors?
Mm-mm. Nope.
So
I thought all the gloves were off at that point.
Well, no, because the parliamentarian has can enforce those rules, and there are things that they have to do and that they have to abide by. You know, the point is this. You can't run a legislative body without having, that purports to be able to write law that everyone else has to obey, without being an observance of the laws that you've written for yourself. That's the point, right?
You're talking about our Congress?
Yeah, I know.
Come on.
I didn't say that they did it. I said that they're supposed to do it.
Of course. Yeah, there's rules. I thought once they got behind the closed door, see, the parliamentarian and those guys just kind of like set off on the side and like made coffee or something. And the rest of them sat around like, you know, smoking cigars and go, "Well, if you give me X, I'll vote for your bill." I thought that's how it really works.
Well, they do, but they do. But when they go to cast a vote, then they have to do it in an orderly fashion.
I got
you. And if there's an amendment that's going to be attached, they have to do it in an orderly fashion. If they're going to put a hold on a bill, which any senator can do for any reason if he wants to, well, then it has to be done in an orderly fashion, et cetera, et cetera. There was no decorum in orderly fashion in what we heard yesterday. Now, was there?
No, and there was, you know, there's actually several senators that were censured for unparliamentary language.
No, what
and
I
we can't even get we can't even get these guys to shut up.
No, what I want to know is when did the Democrats come so far out of the child slash baby hating closet? Because they're all out of the closet now. Right there in front of Kavanaugh's kids. One of them, I'm telling you, that little girl can't be but 8 or 9 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's young.
Yeah, right there in front of God and all, as they say here down in New Orleans, right there, the worser points of this protest. Now, again, why all the hysterics? Because the profiteering from baby killing might be curtailed a few million bucks. Can't have that now, can we?
A few billion bucks. That's big. That's huge business. It's huge, and it shouldn't even exist. That's, you know, that's a major. I think that's one of the backbone issues with where we're going as a union right now. We seem to cross over the line where we believe that it's okay to kill babies under almost any situation, and now it's becoming okay to kill the older generation when we have certain stipulations in place, and then other times it's when the court orders it. There's a couple of cases just recently that I've been following these. With Washington, Oregon, were I think the two states where older people were put to death because the medication that they wanted was too expensive, and the state decided, or actually the feds decided, that they couldn't get the medication. Pfizer paid for the medication for one person for a period of time, but even they gave up and let the person die. So I'll be talking about that in upcoming weeks. But it's pretty interesting that we're just out to kill anybody now. And now that you can manipulate DNA, you're looking at genetic eugenics. You're looking to start to weed out people. You're going to be denying life to children that don't meet the grade as the Uber child.
Well, you know that 95% Iceland, Down syndrome abortuarium capital of the planet now. Iceland is now now has technology, medical technology, to successfully identify and murder 95% of Down syndrome children. Will never be born in Iceland as a result of proactive genocide against the Down syndrome.